He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Key.
And we are in 2019, and
there must be an auto show.
Well, there's an auto show. Yes, you're right. The Detroit Auto Show is either about to start or has started, and noticeably, the LA Auto Show has already been. I guess that's the one that has it. But Detroit's coming up, and it'll be the last year supposedly that it's going to be in this month. It's going to move to June next year. So the report I read this morning. Because they want to revamp the whole thing and try to make it interesting again, a week-long type of event with lots of fun things and trying to lure the European manufacturers who are not going to attend the Detroit Auto Show this year en masse across the board, come back in and reappear at it. So we'll see what happens.
Is that Detroit or LA?
What?
Is that Detroit?
Okay. This is the Detroit Auto Show we're talking about in this particular situation. And Jay's ready to jump in here and add his
Here's my optimistic self here, speaking out.
Oh, optimistic.
It's dead. Okay. It's over. There will be a show. It'll be a gimmicky show. The next show will be in June 2020, so 18 months from now. And yes, they want to change the format. I know Ford is very much involved in promoting all sorts of things.
When is the Geneva Auto Show?
I forget.
Well, the reason is because
it's the only one that matters, really.
Yes, but when is it? Because when you start doing things on the calendar that is reactive instead of smart, especially what I think is fascinating is, and there's no evidence this is that. The car industry has twigged on this yet, although one of the things I wanted to ask both of you is, obviously, it was a sports weekend, and so obviously there were a lot of car adverts, and the main thing that I noticed as a non-car guy is that most of the car ads, first it was Toyota, let's go places. Now, everyone's picking up, it's like, stop binge-watching, stop sitting around on your backsides and go out and camp. I know you were going to binge watch this weekend, and I think that who's got that? I think it might be Hyundai, but there's a whole new marketing thrust that I have just noticed that has to do with get in your car and drive someplace with it.
I don't know whether this is to stave off the self-driving craze that's been sweeping across the car industry in the last 12 to 24 months or not, but you know. Just briefly, if I can be brief, I can never be as brief as our friend Jay can, but I don't think that America is going to ascribe to self-driving cars in the way that all this hoopla about them has been making us seem that it might happen. Jay's going to disagree with me in that.
Not necessarily.
I've talked to a lot of people, just common people around, and it's amazing. They're not particularly car people around, but they do like to drive their cars, and cars that need to be driven by us are going to be around for a long time. I think there's going to be a niche market of self-driving cars down in some of the southern states and maybe out in the western states in places where driving is slower and in sort of planned areas where the cars can maneuver safely without.
We've discussed this, and back to Jill's question or comment about, I think you're referring to ads that associate cars with active lifestyles, pretty much.
Just cars,
right? A lot of new cars, SUVs coming out.
But there aren't necessarily for the. It was the whole line. Who's got the Santa Fe? Who's got the Santa Fe?
Hyundai.
Okay, so it was Hyundai, and they're doing their entire line. They've got a different. You try rock climbing, then you got people camping. The whole point is because commercial, you know, commercials are not made overnight.
SUV lineup of
vehicles. I think there's a. I think, and this is just a
conjecture.
Yes. With SUVs and becoming more and more crossovers and less truck-based vehicles, and there's more and more of a blend towards SUV becoming just jacked up high sedans so that old people, an aging population, can ease in and out of them more easily. There is a realization, I think, amongst the industry that you know, SUVs as they once were is kind of a notion that is disappearing, and some of the manufacturers are bringing that back. And a little bit to your point, Toyota just came out with a new RAV 4 that is very much inspired by the 4Runner, which is a truck-based SUV. And there's, you know, we all know that the RAV 4 is a car-based platform. It is a small crossover vehicle, like the Subaru Forester, the Jeep Cherokee, the Honda CR-V, but yet they've tried to make it look more rugged.
And so, they made its particular model of it within the RAV4 line is going to have all the looks, plus special suspension, do-ups, and all that kind of thing, so that it can be more rugged.
And let me open another can here, and I'm not going to say of worms, but and now Robin's going to jump into this. This is what Jeep has been doing with their car-based small SUVs. They all have a
Trailhawk version.
Trailhawk version. So they'll take...
Which is the one that can go off-road. You know, it's got a label on it. Fiat-based. So the Rubicon Trail.
Fiat-based, little Fiat-based SUVs that now are simulated with old Jeep Cherokees.
Actually listening to this suggests to me that the car industry is very much like televised politics. You know, the fact is that it's so...
They have no idea what they're doing.
Exactly. And it's so divorced from what... You know what? You got another group that's got families that have kids that they got to take to hockey and soccer and this or and that or, and they're going outside, and you need someplace, once again, to stow the equipment and the kids and the French fries and the toddler. And that's, you know, welcome to life. I'm sorry. It's just.
Did I mention a few weeks ago I drove a Dodge Caravan, a Grand Caravan,
and you liked it?
At the minivan, yes, I actually did, and
it's
the outgoing model. And I hope nobody's listening. Well, I hope people are listening, but I hope I'm not called back on this. I actually enjoyed driving that minivan.
Which one?
It drove like a car. It's a. I was going to say stupid, Grand Caravan, the outgoing model, not even the new Pacifica.
Right.
What
it's
year?
A rental, 17. It's a rental fleet vehicle. They only
was
sell it to
Dodge
rental fleets.
Or
yeah.
Was it a Chrysler? No, the Dodge, isn't it a nice package vehicle?
Let's not get too excited. I was just pleasantly surprised. And it does everything.
It's a box, and it's very
a box.
A behemoth, right.
Yeah.
With sliding, you can get the kid in and the
double
dog
double sliding
in
doors
and
on both
and
sides. You got the stow-and-go seating so you can get a flat floor.
And when you drive it on the hutch, it actually stays on the road.
Which is even more amazing.
And gets actually reasonable mileage.
But the point being that the industry and the discussion around it and what people actually require for their lifestyles is
none of this matters. Okay, let me say something. Now, the auto industry is going to be shaped by the Chinese market. That is the big thing.
That's your prediction.
It's not a prediction. It's a fact. It's been going on for the last few years, and industry analysts have been noting that. And look at European manufacturers that are selling in China. Volkswagen, for instance. Let's not forget, Volkswagen is still, I believe, the biggest auto manufacturer in the world, even though their presence here is always, you know, half in, half out, kind of a low-volume manufacturer. They are the biggest manufacturer in the world, and their biggest market is China. And so is GM's biggest market, China.
Yes, and the Buick is
and
China.
The only reason we have Buicks is because there's a Chinese market. So the Chinese market is dictating what we are driving, except for those three or four big pickup trucks that we're going to hang on to for, I don't know, in a few more years.
And their sales are booming. This is a fact that I heard 10 days ago. A Ford F-150 or a Ford F-Series pickup truck is selling every 35 seconds somewhere in the United States. And that was that. I don't know how they get that, and I don't know whether it's 35 seconds of a work day at a dealership or whether it's 35 seconds of a 24-hour day. But the sales of the F-150 are so successful that somebody came up with this concept that there was one being sold somewhere in the continental United States every 35 seconds, which is mind-blowing to think that that's – because I can drive by our local Ford dealership and one isn't being sold every day. But that's the difference between market areas, I suppose. It's being more than offset by probably cities like Dallas and out in California, where they're probably selling every 35 seconds to the masses that want to drive those instead
of
the
California
Cadillacs. No, they're buying the Priuses still.
Priuses, but Honda Accords, Honda Civics, Toyota Camrys.
The more relevant point of all of that is that, once again, it is a, if not regional, there is a
totally
local element, you know, and when talking about cars or trucks, it's absolutely critical, just as in politics, to note that the local needs or the regional needs are obviously going to be different because, as somebody once said, you know, it's a pretty big country. You could put, this was way back when, you know, every Serbian refugee that you were looking for in North Dakota and still have room for more.
Yeah, you know, or Wyoming.
Let's change topics. This has been fun. I want to change topics to talk about what's happening in the pricing of cars, because we've been talking sort of loosely about the fact of whether or not the tariff situation was going to cause an increase in the supplies of materials that go into the vehicles. And I'm not sure whether this is...
It's a good excuse to hike the prices.
It's a good excuse to hike the prices, whether they have to or not. I stopped by a Jeep dealer in Vermont over the weekend, perused the lot, saw two Jeep Cherokees of absolutely what I figured was identical fitment of options. And one was $1,700 more expensive than the other. And they each indeed was, both are 2019 model years. One was priced at $31,120. And the other was priced at somewhere around $32,000 or maybe just around $33,000. And they had the same option packages on the window stickers. Each one had a different base sticker price for the identical model of vehicle that this was. It's called a Latitude Plus. And I noticed that the delivery charges had gone up $75. They're up near $1,500 per vehicle on a truck that brings them into the dealership. That's part of the add-on price to the base price of the vehicles. Now, it's costing the manufacturers $1,500 or close to it to deliver many of the cars now. It seems to me like it was just yesterday that it was about $700 to $900 were on the stickers for these delivery. But I noticed that the option packages were, well, one was $100 more than the other for the identical option package between the two vehicles. One still had the wrap on its steering wheel and the wrap on its seat, so it probably was just delivered, and this was the one that had higher option prices on it too. But this may be happening across car and SUV lines, across the industry, as we move through the 2019 model year.
And it might have absolutely nothing to do with tariffs, but rather just the price of materials that you are passing on to the consumer very happily.
Price of options.
Yeah.
And
whatever else, because I've never noticed, way back, remember Hurricane Katrina? Remember it being a perfect example for gas to creep up? Remember that it never crept down quite the never crept.
But it's creeping down now.
Yes, it is.
And let me tell our listeners where the cheapest gas is between here and Chicopee, Massachusetts. Chicopee, Massachusetts was 2 weeks ago at $2.17 to $2.19.9 for regular. I paid $2.13.9 in Pittsfield, Massachusetts over the weekend at one mobile dealer, and I saw $2.19.9 at a Shell dealer, and they were all around
what about $0.30+ difference? Two gas stations, same brand, one in Amenia and one in Dover Plains.
Right, $2.49 in Amenia and $2.62 or something in Dover Plains.
Yeah.
And then in Millerton, it's a third price.
And range. The premium price, which I had to buy that day, was the difference was even greater. It was unbelievable.
The interesting thing about gas pricing is as they lower the regular grade price to lead you into the pumps, you look at what the price of the plus and the premium is. The premium at this $2.13 regular grade gas was $2.69. Subtract one from the other and you get...
Try three plus in a lot of them. I saw 340 anyways, where they were selling 260 for regular.
Meanwhile, in that northwest corner, right around from the broadcast area, they're still struggling to get down below 260. They haven't in Lakeville, but they have in Sharon. And in Canaan, it's still at 270. So, and these are for the same branded gasolines that are available between Sharon and Canaan, Shell and Mobil. So who knows what's
But wasn't there, this was several years ago, the ability to price the different grades, let's call it optionally,
they've been doing that for a long time.
Yes.
It used to be 10 and 20 cents a gallon between regular, mid-grade and premium, and it still is out in the West. If Jay were to come across the country, he would stop at a gasoline station in Wyoming or Montana, and not only could he get ethanol-free gasoline, pure gasoline, but they were just 10 and 20 cents between the regular grade and the premium for most of the Midwestern, the Western states.
Okay, welcome Google once again. When I'm traveling, I go on Google Maps and I look for gas stations and I move along the road I'm going to go.
Gas Buddy.
And you find out what the price of gas is. And the more those apps are out and being used, and the more the price of gas is going to, you know, at least in a local area, the prices are going to match or come close.
Pretty close. Tarrington is a pretty good area to say that they're price matched throughout the same branded stations.
Same when
Tarrington.
You drive down to when you go down to New Milford and you get in on
right
Route
on
7,
Route 7
you get,
South.
You get
they're all get within two pennies of each other, at least for the regular grade.
Yeah,
and but there are good places to try to locate yourself if you're needing gas.
Talking about the differential between the mid-grade and the premium,
right?
Not the low grade. That something happened in the past, I don't know, 3-4 years where it became okay for that not to be 10 cents
well,
a piece.
You know,
I don't know who buys
mid-grade
because either you need high grade and just suck it up, or you can put the cheap
right,
stuff
right.
And
well,
that's
the irony
it.
Of it is the premium recommended octane rating on all the cars is 91 octane, and you can't get 91 octane in the in most of the stations. It's 93 octane. Mm-hmm. So does that give them the right to offer that price at 70 cents or 60 cents or 80 cents above regular? I guess it does, but it certainly doesn't cost them that much to mix it to the octane.
Or you can have fun putting a half a tank of 89
if you want to stop and pump. Yeah, pump regular
or you put
and
one.
Well, mid grade is probably close. There are still some old Sunoco stations, which may or may not be Sunoco stations, who have the 5 graded pumps. And really, what you're doing is they're putting regular grade and premium into the ground, and there's a mixing valve to give you the octane rating that you're getting in the mid grades. Between regular and high test, you won't see 3 different tanks in the ground, except if there's diesel there, you will, in stations anymore. It's just high grade, it's high octane in one tank, regular grade in the other, and you better hope that if you're doing mid grade, that they're mixing it at the right level.
Can I go back to?
You can go ahead.
Detroit,
China, and the New Year, Times Square. I was at Times Square not on New Year's Eve, but the night before, and it was jam packed. And interestingly, I'm walking down Broadway towards Times Square, and there's
flashing.
This big booth up, you know, on
side of
in
building.
The air, and there's a car on that platform. And lights are shining and the spotlights are on. And it said, you know, all it said, there was not even the brand of it. It just said made in, and I forget the city in China. Chinese car, full display, Times Square, thousands if not hundreds of thousands of people saw that car over the time it was there.
It's actually a neat looking vehicle too.
And it looks great. I still don't know, and I was going to research the brand, and I forgot. So I will do that for next week.
Did you know the name of the car?
No, there was no name on the car.
It's an SUV.
It was a kind of a roundy shaped, not cool looking car, but it was, you know, it was 100 feet up in the air somewhere.
Oh, it's a good place to put it for people to
see.
It
was a great place to put it.
The interesting thing about it is it doesn't.
More of the story.
Does not look like any American version.
Those Chinese cars are coming.
And.
tariffs or not.
Some of the Chinese cars look remarkably like a Range Rover in some of their exterior forms, and other vehicles too. But this one is totally unique in its look, and I think it's fascinating because there are people out there that are tired of seeing themselves come down the road all day long, and there'll be a lot of people, if this thing is any good, if this vehicle is any good at all, it'll take a while for people to get used to maybe testing their capability of enduring a Chinese car. But it is a neat-looking vehicle. I think it'll sell.
People buy Chinese stuff all the time.
It happens to be, I think, a hybrid or an all-electric vehicle, too. It's not going to be a total gasoline variant of this vehicle, I think.
But you don't know the name of it either?
No.
No, I can't remember. It's hard to pronounce anyways. I'm looking in one of my periodicals here, but I'm not coming across it as we talk. So, Jay, continue.
Well, that was it. Was my little take on
the cars. That's good.
Well, let's go to vehicle sales. You have the sales figure. Jeep has been doing well. Subaru, I guess we sort of said this already. Subaru and Jeep are both doing well.
Yeah, the brands that came across as winners in 2018, I think Land Rover is up. Jaguar is down. FCA is up. It's not all rosy in the FCA group because, you know, Fiat is way down.
Dismal.
Ram is up. Dodge is kind of, I think that the cars there are like status quo.
But isn't it JLA? Isn't it Jaguar Land Rover?
Mm-hmm.
So the group is doing so-so.
Range Rover's doing great and Jaguar's not.
Yeah. And it's back to the luxury car manufacturers are more and more. So here are the luxury brand winners. Mercedes is number one, followed closely by BMW, followed by Lexus, close also. They're around 300,000 sales each. Distant fourth, Audi, with still over 200,000. And then you go down, I think
Cadillac is fifth, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think Acura is in front of Cadillac. Cadillac is fifth.
Acura just overtook Cadillac this year in sales.
Again, did Honda make Acura?
Honda makes Acura.
So sort of as with the news business, it's worth your while to find out who's making, who actually makes those cars in those groups.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You might as well.
Okay. I don't think the listeners care so much.
No, sure they do.
Listeners who want to buy a Honda, they want the upscale, they go to Acura. If you want to buy a Nissan,
it's worth knowing.
You go to the Infiniti. If you want to buy a Toyota upscale, you go to a Lexus. So that's true.
But I think the whole idea of a luxury vehicle is when you set out to buy a luxury vehicle, you're not going to a Toyota dealership and saying, maybe I'll upgrade to a Lexus. You're looking at an Audi, a Mercedes, and a Lexus, and you decide to buy one or the other. In Cadillac's case and GM's case, I think GM, the American manufacturers other than FCA, have had a rough year. Ford sales are way down. GM sales are down. And I hate to be gloomy, but I think that's going to continue.
Except for trucks.
As long as trucks sell. And maybe, you know, I still don't see the point of buying a pickup truck to put a half a gallon gas tank in the back of it and a toolbox. I mean, it just doesn't add up.
Okay. I'm going to change to recalls. Takata airbags are back in the news thanks to Ford. Ford has got approximately a million vehicle recall for 2010 through 2014 model year vehicles, an assortment of them. The Takata airbags may rupture, or if they are set off, they may rupture and injure you. The Takata airbag thing has been going on for, 5 years now? And it was sort of quieting down, except that not all the cars that needed to be repaired have been repaired. We talked about that on an earlier show. But Ford has just made headlines in all the news forums that they've got up just about a million vehicles that are up for recall. They could expand that as they find out where their Takata airbags are beyond the 2010-2014 model year cars. So if you're an owner of a 2010 to 2014 Ford vehicle, and this includes Lincolns, you should check with your dealer if you have a vehicle that might be subject to the recall to have the airbag inflators replaced. And that is a safety note for this week's show.
And okay. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarket. This is Car Keys.